Hello. Welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'd like to begin today's program with an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 24th of October. The title of this article is Balancing Work and Play at Conferences, and the article was written for the journal by Don Gilbertson. Karaoke, pickleball, goat yoga. Employees split on mandatory fun on business trips. This article comes from, of all places, Phoenix. The conference at the 950-room JW Marriott Desert Ridge Resort in early October had everything hotel industry folks could want. Panels with the CEOs of Marriott, Motel 6, and Wyndham. Outlooks on the economy, room rates, and travel trends. And an inner tube race in the pool. Conferences and corporate retreats are back, and with them, the heaping side of scheduled fun. Scan the lineup for your next conference. Beyond the usual happy hours and the golf outings, there's karaoke, there's pickleball and yoga, casino night, guided hikes, and yes, lazy river races. It's reinvigorating the age-old debate for attendees. Just how all business are you? Are these conference extras a priceless chance to meet a prospective client or new employer outside the hotel ballroom, or cringy, forced fun that could even land you in the HR office or urgent care? Elise Kirby, a national relationship manager for a company that helps property owners navigate insurance claims, is a fan. She has been to 8 conferences this year. In North Carolina, she signed up for goat yoga and a walking tour. At the lodging conference in Phoenix this month, she flew in early for a guided 6 a.m. hike in the Sonoran Desert the first day of the conference. She was initially on a wait list and kept calling for a spot to open up. The Nashville resident calls the activities outside the regular sessions crucial. She switched jobs this year and was the only person in her company at the Phoenix conference. By the time the opening session occurred, she had connected with an architect, a financier, and someone who makes stainless steel pools for hotels. Meeting people for more than 2 seconds at the bar allowed me to have a connection, even if we had no business synergies, she said. It isn't hard to find online grumbling about the dawn to closing time agendas at conferences and conventions. Plenty of business travelers are happy to retreat to their room or a local restaurant after the day's closing session. Janice Chaka, who is a Boston-based career coach for introverts, has no problem with conference activities as long as they're optional. She tells her clients to draw up a plan before the conference. It's finding a balance of which events you can attend while also getting downtime to recharge, she says. 2 words that will automatically cross any activity off her conference to-do list: team building. Travel management company Navan this week said conference attendance is helping business travel return to near pre-pandemic levels. Conference travel accounted for 15% of business travel year to date, up from 12% in 2019, the company says. Meeting planners say social activities rank 4th among the factors that make conference memorable for attendees, according to American Express Global Business Travel's 2025 forecast. The top 3, content, venue, and destination. Attendees want valuable insights and actionable takeaways that enrich their professional lives, according to the report published in early October. But conferences organizers say that group activities are a critical part of the mix, offering a relief from keynotes, panels, and endless breakout sessions. Call them icebreakers if you wish, or laid-back networking. Harry Aver founded and puts on the annual Lodging Conference. This year, nearly 3,000 attendees paid about $3,000 each to attend the 3-day event. Most of activities filled up. Aver said he likes his event to be known as the Fun Conference. The inner tube race, which premiered last year at the resort's Lazy River attraction, grew out of a popular rubber duck race at the conference. Participation doubled this year to about 60 people, he says. This despite a change in the rules to make it a more lazy float. Attendees couldn't just walk through the lazy river with a tube around them. You had to have your butt in the tube, he says. Not everybody wants business colleagues to see them in swimsuits. Javier says that the events are all optional. He does not like the terms forced fun or mandatory fun. It's a lot like 95% of the people do it, and if you don't do it, you're left out, he says. Under consideration for next year, inviting conference goers to rappel off a building. His insurance company said no, but he has found an outfitter who has covered. Chris McChenzie attends lots of conferences as a financial services executive. The industry does not get as creative as others do, but the Boston executive says he's seen an increase in optional activities. They include cigar rolling, cooking demonstrations, and wine tasting. And he says casino nights with play money are growing in popularity as betting has gone mainstream now. These events can be part of the main conference or as side events sponsors throw to get attendees' attention. Maybe no one is really feeling inspired by another cocktail party, he says. He'll play golf occasionally when there's time and did a wine tasting at a conference in Washington, D.C. Karaoke is a no-go for him and anything in a swimsuit. Yoga, too, because the skimpy clothing might come close to violating my no swimsuit thing. Pickleball is also off the table for him. One of my other rules might be nothing where I could tear my ACL. The following article also appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 24th of October. This article was written for the journal by Ray A. Smith, and the title is Applications to MBA Programs Soar. Workers frustrated by an extended cool down in the white-collar job market are applying to business schools in numbers not seen in years. Applications to MBA programs increased 12% in 2024, according to a new survey of schools by the Graduate Management Admission Council, which is a nonprofit that tracks application trends. The rebound, which reverses 2 years of declines, was most pronounced for full-time in-person degrees. Applications to those programs rose 32%, the highest level in a decade. Applications from Americans drove the newfound popularity of U.S. programs. In past years, international student prospects have filled out enrollment at many U.S. business schools. Renewed enthusiasm for the MBA reflects limited prospects for recent college graduates despite a still strong labor market overall, say recent graduates and MBA administrators. Among factors hurting white-collar work is artificial intelligence has begun to upend many jobs, while more established employees have recently quit job hopping, leaving fewer open roles out there. Young college graduates choosing to go back to school say the decision could make them stronger job candidates in the near future. Both young workers and laid-off older workers often gravitate toward MBA programs during times when they think there could be an economic downturn. Scott Carpenos, 23 years of age, is pursuing a part-time MBA at New York University's Stern School of Business while he continues to work for a wealth management company. His goal, developing new skills to make himself more valuable. I wasn't certain if my job was going to be redundant, so I wanted to go back to school to gain a broader network just in case, he said. Several highly ranked American business schools, including Stanford Graduate School of Business, the Yale School of Management, and the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School, had double-digit increases in applications to their programs. Applications to Columbia Business School rose 27%. Harvard Business School registered a 21% increase, while applications to the Booth School of Business at the University of Chicago were 22% higher than they were in 2023. With so much change happening in the business and societal landscapes today due to artificial intelligence, a changing workforce, and challenges related to sustainability, business education now is being recognized as more vital, more now than ever, said Greg Hanafy, who is Associate Dean of Degree Programs and Operations at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University. Kellogg reported a 23% increase in applications this past year, reaching a level not seen since 2020, when the pandemic triggered a wave of layoffs. Today, the United States job market is strong and unemployment remains low, but lower wage positions in retail and dining, as well as in healthcare and government, have fueled much of the labor market's growth over the past 2 years. A white-collar job market downturn that began with tech workers in 2022 has now spread to other sectors. Major employers including Goldman Sachs, Lyft, Microsoft, and PricewaterhouseCoopers have laid off a combined tens of thousands of workers this year alone. Hiring for roles that usually require a bachelor's degree dropped below 2019 levels in recent months, according to payroll provider ADP. That slump has been steeper for 20-somethings who are now running into a bottleneck on the lower rungs of the corporate ladder as more established professionals stay put. Michaela Merchant, 27, was looking to transition from a startup to a bigger tech company in 2023, but the job market became so daunting that she decided to pursue her MBA at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan instead. It is giving her the confidence she will need to pursue roles that previously seemed harder to get. I definitely think it will help me in my future prospects, she says. Candidates from India, China, and Nigeria, countries that traditionally have fed large numbers of professionals into business schools in the West, and now interested in applying to programs closer to home, according to a GMAC survey of prospective students. Business schools in the United Kingdom and Canada experienced substantial international application declines for 2024. People applying to part-time business school programs in their home countries rose 9%, and MBA programs with more flexibility are in higher demand, said Joy Jones, who is chief executive of GMAC. Roughly two-thirds of online and flexible MBA programs reported rising applications. Interest from women increased by 10 percentage points from last year, she added. There are people who don't want to leave roles if they are concerned about the economic environment and its mixed signals, but they still perceive that they will need to upskill to be competitive out there, Jones said. The next article that I would like to read for you is from the Wall Street Journal, the 14th of October. This article's title is Making Desperate Pleas for Work on LinkedIn. This article was written for the journal by Anne Marie Alcantara. Job seekers are now putting pink banners and the word #mark desperate on their profiles. Will that help them or hurt these would-be employees? People aren't just # open to work on LinkedIn. Now some job seekers are plain # desperate. LinkedIn has long had a profile picture banner with the hashtag open to work. It lets the workers broadcast that availability in the hopes that an employer might reach out or a friend might connect them to an open job. But now job seekers at the end of their ropes are putting a more brutal spin on their status, a pink banner and the word desperate. Those who are using the banner and their desperation often reflect the fact that they have been without a job for months or maybe even years. Meanwhile, inflation, recruiting scams, fake job listings, and a cooling employment market for white-collar and other jobs have people feeling defeated. Some of them are working, just not in their chosen professions. Alex Velazquez, a 39-year-old senior art director in motion graphics, started his career right before the 2007 to 2009 recession. The current rut he is in feels worse. Velazquez was laid off in January. While he has freelanced before to stay afloat, he is not getting much work this time around. He attributes his lack of work partly to his industry's growing use of artificial intelligence and last year's actors and writers strikes. In late September, he added the pink desperate banner to his LinkedIn profile photo. "It's hard not to feel desperate," says Velazquez, who lives in West New York, New Jersey. The September jobs report showed a still strong labor market, but Labor Department data from last week showed the number of workers quitting their jobs fell to the lowest rate in over 4 years. In August, a sign that people are more cautious about finding new roles. Every open job on LinkedIn in the U.S. attracts 2.5 applicants, up from 1.5 in 2022, according to LinkedIn data. "There are still some lingering concerns out there in some quarters of the labor market," says Corey Stable, an economist with Indeed Hiring Lab, the economic research arm of jobs website Indeed. Recruiters, hiring managers, and career coaches are divided on whether or not LinkedIn's open-to-work banner helps or hurts would-be employees. Workers can mark their profiles as being open to work without displaying the badge. Using the highly visible banner, though, alerts their extended network about their need for a job and can potentially spur referrals, or it can broadcast that dissatisfaction with someone's current role. The desperate banner draws even more attention to someone's need for a job. Recruiters say the tag could help people get noticed and hired, but it could also backfire because some hiring managers might see it as a signal that somebody caused problems in their previous workplace. Open to work can result in less aggressive offers, says Keith Sims, chief executive of Integrity Resource Management, a recruiting firm in Indianapolis. Courtney Summer Myers, a 28-year-old graphic designer and illustrator in Southampton, United Kingdom, started the Desperate label in late September after being laid off for the second time in January. Myers' post has not led to an offer for a full-time job, but she has received thousands of messages with people offering freelance projects and a few job interviews. Her post adding the hashtag garnered more than 426,000 reactions, as well as 9,500 comments and 8,815 reposts. There's been a lot of discourse about how the open-to-work banner puts off recruiters and hiring managers because it makes you come across as desperate, she wrote in her LinkedIn post. "Finally, as a victim of redundancy, I am desperate, and I don't think that's anything to be ashamed of." Inspired by Myers, Matt Scheidt, who uses they as a pronoun, changed their LinkedIn profile picture in early October and posted about it. Scheidt's frustration stems from the difficulty of getting any job in their industry and how long it has taken. In one particularly difficult scenario, Scheidt, a 25-year-old screenwriter and producer in Los Angeles, was ghosted by a would-be employer a few weeks after the writer's strike began. "It feels like a lot like dating," Scheidt says about the job market. 16 months later, Scheidt is struggling to land a full-time role and cat-sitting to cover his expenses. A health scare further delayed their job hunt. Currently, more than 200 million people have the hashtag OpenToWork option turned on publicly or privately, LinkedIn says, and 85% of the people who post about being open to work find support from their network, such as referrals and connections, according to the company. Today's job market feels uniquely frustrating to job seekers because the labor market is so splintered, say recruiters and job seekers. Some sectors and some cities, such as commercial construction in the Southwest, are still hiring briskly and have talent shortages, while other industries, such as marketing and brand management, have cooled off rapidly, says Jeff Kay, who is chief executive of Sanford Rose Associates, an executive search and recruiting firm. Danielle Blanding is a 27-year-old artist looking for work in the fine arts industry. She started as an arts administration intern at a nonprofit art gallery in January of 2020, shortly before graduating in March of 2020. In August of 2020, she was promoted to an arts administrator role on a six-month contract. Since the contract ended in February of 2021, she has worked as a waitress and a bartender to pay her bills. Still, she is frustrated that she hasn't been able to find work in her field. Blanding moved back in with her parents in Atlanta and is now seeing a therapist. This month, Blanding posted on LinkedIn about Bing, hashtag open to work, and changed her profile picture to the hashtag desperate banner. She has received messages of support and commiseration from people who are in the same situation. "I don't think the desperate banner takes away my confidence or bravery," Blanding says. The next article is from a recent issue of the Wall Street Journal also. Workers have hang-ups about calls. This article was written for the Journal by Callum Borchers. Bosses and employees are wrestling over whether that old-fashioned phone call has a place in the hybrid office. Your coworkers Zoom, Slack, email, and text with ease, but good luck getting many of them to make or answer an old-fashioned telephone call. Phone avoidance is so pervasive it has a clinical name, telephonophobia. A lot of bosses just call it aggravating. Phone use or disuse is an intensifying battle in the hybrid work war. On one side are people with sore thumbs and Zoom fatigue who are trying to resurrect phone calls, arguing they occupy an important middle ground in business. Sometimes a video meeting is overkill, they contend, and a typed out message is not enough. "I love technology, but it creates a cognitive load when you're looking at 32 face boxes on a screen or clicking between multiple chat windows," says Bill Cox, who works remotely from Seattle as a vice president of corporate and product marketing at Lyra Health, which is a mental health company. "When you jump on a phone call, it's like, ah, relief." Cox, who is 51 years of age, is evangelizing for phone calls at work with mixed results. The closest he gets from many team members is a recorded voice memo on Slack. On the other side of this telecom skirmish are phone dodgers who insist any conversation that doesn't need to be face-to-face or on camera ought to be an email. Being put on the spot by a ringing phone makes someone squirm, especially people under age 40 who grew up texting and instant messaging with a moment to collect their thoughts. They say video calls are less anxiety-provoking because they're usually scheduled and often involve groups of people. Calling without an appointment, or at least a text in advance, isn't merely inconvenient, but downright rude to some. Nick Minaj's Boss Ass B is a go-to hype song when Riley Young needs to psych herself up for a phone call. She works in an office in Plano, Texas, 4 days a week as an audience engagement manager at Next After, which is a firm that advises nonprofits on fundraising strategies. She doesn't think twice about swinging by a colleague's desk to talk, but pick up the phone on her work from home day? If I can't see their facial expressions, I'm fearful that I might say the wrong thing or they'll take something the wrong way, and I won't be able to tell, she says. Emails and instant messages carry the same risk, but Young, who is 26, prefers them over voice calls because she considers them more efficient, usually. She's been trading emails with a third-party vendor for 2 weeks now, trying to resolve a problem she suspects could have been fixed in a 2-minute phone call. Many Americans' phone skills are rusty. Data traffic on mobile apps soared from 1.5 trillion megabytes in 2012 to 73.7 trillion megabytes in 2022, the most recent year available from CTIA, a wireless communications trade group. Landline usage plummeted over the same decade, while voice call messages on mobile devices grew just 8.7%. For most people, a social call isn't a daily occurrence, not even a quick check-in with a spouse or child. Two-thirds of American adults talk to family, friends, or neighbors on the phone 4 or fewer times a week, according to a Census Bureau Household Pulse survey conducted this spring. For 1 out of 5 adults, social calls happen less than once a week. Millennials and Gen Zers generally call less than others, but telephone phobia isn't purely a generational condition. Stefan Boudreau, 46, says placing a business call makes him almost as nervous as he was when he phoned his future father-in-law to say he planned to propose. Half the battle is convincing people telephone etiquette still matters. Scott Easton runs a small staffing agency that places independent tech workers, many of whom ignore his phone calls about contact opportunities. It's gotten so bad that in recent months he started using Loom, an app for taping video messages to contact candidates on LinkedIn. The response rate is about 40%, much higher than with voicemail. This is all we have time for on our program on careers for today. I hope that you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening in. I'm Irene Lubin, and I'm a volunteer reader. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.